Hello and welcome to Conscious Living. I'm Wendy Garrett on Empower Radio. Thank you for tuning in. I appreciate your time. Hope you're having a good day wherever you are. Got some great information to share. One of my favorite guests, Penny Kelly, is back. And she's a writer, a teacher. If you want to know about how to use your intuition and connect in ways that would be more helpful, just learning how to follow your own inner guidance, your own inner source, and other sources that may not be seen in what we consider, you know, the Western world as a normal type of connection. But in my own experience and in many indigenous cultures throughout the world, they are very normal. It's just we have to learn more about that aspect. And Penny Kelly is, I think, a really good resource for that. She teaches and works with organic gardening. She's done lots of research into consciousness and had a Kundalini awakening years ago, which was pretty much enough to redirect her entire life. She also works with Dr. William Levengood, and he's done the research with crop circles. Tremendous, tremendous content here. So have whatever you're doing, have a cup of tea, a cup of coffee, sit back, relax, enjoy. Hey, Penny, it's good to have you back.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
Now, I want to get into this book, which we did the other interviews talking about consciousness and energy and about Dr. Levengood's research on crop circles. But this was the one that's underlying it all that kind of goes way out into the next, I think, the next dimension of where we're all going. The robes. You had an encounter. And to think now, it was 1980. Does it seem like it was that long ago to you?
You know, sometimes it seems like it was yesterday. Other times it feels like it never really happened. So I go back and forth between those two poles, but the effect of that whole series of encounters with them really did have a major effect on my life. And I thought in preparation for this interview, I thought I should go back and just kind of look through the book. And as I was reading it, I was thinking, oh my God, I can't believe I wrote that. Oh my God, I can't believe I wrote that.
Yes.
I was like, oh, you know, they were so right on about everything. It's both encouraging and disturbing a little bit. I think we have some big challenges, really exciting challenges coming at us.
For everybody who's just now hearing about this for the first time, in your book, The Robes, A Coming Book of Changes, how did that happen? What is this, the experience, what was this about?
Basically, you know, it was right after Kundalini, the major thrust of the first Kundalini experiences. And Kundalini is when consciousness opens up and there's no obstacles to perception, none, anywhere in time or space at all, anywhere in the universe. And this group of little men in brown robes, that was what I always called them, the little men in brown robes, just appeared in my kitchen one fine winter evening and said they wanted to show me some pictures. And I was not really very graceful or very polite, I guess, in the first meeting. And I was totally rude in the second meeting, but I then felt guilty when they showed up a third time. I thought, okay, I don't know what these guys want, but, you know, they want to show me some pictures. So I thought, let me look at the pictures. And that they also asked me to read a book by Alvin Toffler called The Third Wave. And they said that because I had zero, interest in and zero perceptions in terms of what was happening in the world, I needed at least a starting point. And so they asked me to read that, and it just blew my whole life out of the water. And then they proceeded to show me pictures over the next year and a half. And
see,
the book is
that.
The story of that.
I love that, because it's like, in order to get on the same playing field, the same wavelength, you know, in the same ballpark, the same arena, whatever you want to call it, with another energy, another life source, life force, life consciousness, sometimes we have to do some homework. And they do prescribe certain things that we are supposed to do. You can do it or not. Everybody has free will. But I love that was such an important part was, okay, this is what we're going to address. And first, let's get a common dialogue. And that's what you
right.
were developing by reading that.
At that time, I was going to school. I was in college. And I was, but I was still in all of my spare time. If I did any reading, I was reading romance novels. So that was the extent of my, you know, my
background.
That's
like the potato chip thing. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It was. And so I, you know, I don't think I've read a romance novel since then. So.
Well, yeah, that's how incredible this redirect is when you make these kinds of contacts. And I want to ask physically, when you say they were in your space, was there something else that predicated? I mean, was there a barometric pressure shift? Was it a type of, was there something in your environment that alerted you to their presence? How was it different?
You know, it wasn't, well, physically they were there. You know, I was peeling potatoes. I was staring out the window while I was peeling potatoes. And all of a sudden, you know how you get this feeling that you're not alone in the room?
Mm-hmm.
I just, all of a sudden, you know, turned around. I just had that feeling. Turned around and looked, and there were these little men in brown robes standing there glowing. They were absolutely brilliant. And, you know, and I had had so many very strange experiences by that point that had to do with consciousness because of the Kundalini, that my first reaction was, oh, more crap in the theater of perception. That was my thought.
So, yeah. Here's the flotsam and jetsam, lucky me. Okay.
Yeah, right.
Okay, well, so once you got over your pessimistic view,
right,
what got your attention? Why did you decide it was worth giving them the time of day?
You know, I think it was a combination of their persistence, their attitude, which was this very, to me, unknown, unfamiliar attitude of cheerfulness, business-like, and you are absolutely going to look at these pictures, you know, will, just their willpower. And then, you know, when I finally said, okay, the first experience was so unusual. They took me far out away from the planet, and we turned around and we looked at the planet, and what they showed me was, you know, what happens when there's a roll or shift in the planet. And I was absolutely horrified. I thought, oh my God, you know, and they said, the Earth is a living being. That was a sentence that just caught me immediately. And I thought, what do you mean, living? What do you mean, living being? What are you talking about? You know, mm-hmm. that kind of attitude. And yet I was just fascinated by the things that I saw, and that got the wheels turning. And their suggestion was, you know, do you really think it makes sense to build nuclear, you know, plants on an earthquake fault line? Do you really think that it makes sense to build a high dam when everything shifts and changes over time? You know, at the very least, you should learn to be a little bit closer to the earth and a little bit more respectful. And those were just totally foreign concepts to me at that point. But it got me thinking. It got me thinking. And, you know, each visit focused on information. I saw similar things in some of the visits, but we were dealing with different, we were coming at it from a different perspective, and much of this was telepathic, so you get huge amounts of peripheral information along with the focal point of the visit. So the next visit was on the breakup of nations and how the concept of, you know, national sovereignty would evolve past that. They kept saying, you've grown past this. You have already grown past this. There's no way that you can not deal with this. And that was, just pulled the rug out from under me. So.
Okay. So this is, we're talking, you know, when you're getting that information about building the nuclear plant on a fault line, that was in the 80s, you're getting that. And then, of
yeah,
course, we see what happens
81.
With some of our huge catastrophes since then.
I know. It's like, every so often I think, how could we be so dumb? You know, are we really paying attention? Do we really think that things do not change? Why have we not taken into account the life cycles that Mother Earth goes through? And we're in one right now. You know, we call it global warming, and it's not do to humanity. I mean, we can make it a little bit worse for ourselves, or we can make it a little bit better. But it's not, quote, it's not us. We're not that powerful. We just aren't.
And it's not the cows either.
It's not the cows either.
Everybody, that's the cows. The cows
no,
are doing it. Okay.
It's not.
I'm not even going to go down that road. There's more alien abduction type things going on with that one. But okay, so the other one you mentioned is a huge deal. The dams.
Yeah.
Because that hasn't happened yet. But that's a real weak link in the chain if you
right.
have major catastrophic types of plate shifting going on.
That's right. They said wherever you have mountains, on one or the other side of the mountains, you're going to have typically some sort of tremendous pressure. A fault line will move, a certain number of miles. So if there's an earthquake in, on either side of those mountains, and you've got a huge amount of water behind this little cement wall, and it's really a huge cement wall,
mm-hmm.
And that thing breaks or it leaks, there's no way you're going to fix it. You just can't.
Well, and that's what happened in with Fukushima. They had the dam that people thought would never, it was the perfect, solution.
Oh, yeah.
And that one gave.
Right.
Well, okay, so in terms of what they gave you some things that were going to happen to us. And there were revelations, the changes between 2000 and 2025.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have between 2080 and 2413, which is nice because that's like a further thing than this December 21st that we've all been listening to for the past
right.
3 or 4 years.
Yes.
Thank you. The Mayans are going, oh, please, can we just get past this day?
I know. Oh, it's been kind of a
yeah,
silly
so
thing.
You have a kind of a blueprint or a diagram of potentials.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. What they said, and I have to make a comment here, so I digress just a moment. Somebody said to me not too long ago, that book came out in the 80s, and so that's old news now. And I thought, the destructive side of it, which I try to stay away from in the book, I did not want it to be a doom and gloom kind of thing. Way back then, I was overwhelmed by what I saw as changes. So the thing that I tried to focus on were the potentials and the possibilities and the things that we could look forward to and all of that. And so the book really, I think, offers information or guidance about how to get where we need to be going, and to do so in a way that is, that maximizes our evolutionary potential, because that potential is uncapped and unlimited. So, the things that we have to look forward to, I think, in terms of, just our relationship with the Earth. We ought to be thinking about what kind of relationship we want to have with Mother Earth, and how do we want to develop ourselves and our power in relationship to her power. That, I think, is a major thing, and that will change the way we build, where we build, how we feed ourselves, et cetera, et cetera. I think a second thing that we have to take into account is the fact that they said you're moving away from democracy, you're moving beyond democracy, which at the time I thought was they should have been burned at the stake for heresy. But they said you're moving toward personal responsibility and an evolution of consciousness in which everyone is aware. And I thought, how in the world would that work? But there's lots of things I could say about that, but let me just go on here. They said we were moving away from the kind of blind, leading the blind leadership, and away from welfare and toward a totally different use of land. That the leaders and let me just say something about leadership as I understand it now. Leaders are leaders by virtue of the fact that they have something of value. They're not greedy. They're not power struck. They're not power hungry. They are people who are able to get other people to work together. They're able to get other people to put forth their best foot, their best ideas, and to create something that they didn't think they could create and make it work. Mm-hmm. And then the leader kind of fades into the background. And there's a different leader for each kind of endeavor that we need to take on. And so the idea of a king or a leader, et cetera, used to be the whole concept of divine right came from or was handed down from the ancients who, when somebody had a particular gift, an extraordinary gift, and had developed their power around that gift, and when I say power, I mean literally the power to move mountains and things like that, then that person became the leader for a given project because that's where that person's power skills were developed. And then they would go back into being just an ordinary person after that project was finished. And so what that was called was divine right. They are right to be a leader because the divinity in them has developed in such a way that they have exactly the skill set we need at this time. And so there was this constantly shifting, changing power structure or leadership structure. And the little man said that that's what we would have to move back toward. And this idea of presidents and kings was just an aberration that was, you know, that we would learn some seriously difficult lessons from. So,
oh, yeah. Seriously difficult means intense and somebody's not going to survive.
Yeah.
That's kind of my interpretation of that in a polite way, you're saying.
Right. Yeah. We have to take personal responsibility.
Well, then part of that would be, I mean, right now, when you're looking at all the people amping up in terms of making sure that their military arsenal is fully complete, or what I'm referring to is recently China did a demonstration of their military. I think it was a naval it was an air, the pilots, about 100 pilots showing what they had. And you know, you look around the world and you see North Korea doing their own shifting. And it's just, how do we get from, we are still trying to exercise a show of might globally.
Yeah.
From that phase to what you're talking about, which is the basically a co-created or collective upgrade of everybody being involved and having a say, and not democratic, but more of a collective and collaborative vision of working and living and being in this space on the planet. How do we get from point A to point? Did they give you a clue?
They really didn't give me much of a clue, but you know, you piece things together from, I piece things together from the way that, you know, from all the things I saw. There was a point where there was an awful lot of chaos. It was just a crazy world. And that point we are approaching very soon now. It was from 2015 to 2021, was just a very difficult period for everybody. You know, the kind of things that we see happening in the Middle East were really happening in a lot of places. And there were a few places that were a little more peaceful, a little more organized, a little more willing to say, you know, we need some higher consciousness here, that kind of thing. You know, we need a higher bird call to be able to attract the ordinary person, you know, and so there is a lot of sorting out. Most of that was accomplished by fighting. There was an awful lot of what I'm going to call the chickens coming home to roost, meaning that the results of our past 100 years of our way of living, the poor health, the craziness, you know, the willingness of a people to be led, to be manipulated, because they're so focused on themselves that they can't see what's happening around them. All of those things lead to disasters, lots of, a whole series of small disasters. Nothing really catastrophic, but a whole series of small catastrophes. And then finally, you know, there, it did look like there was a huge loss of population, and the people that remain are just, you know, looking at one another. We're looking at one another saying, we have to do it differently. You know, we have to do it differently.
So it takes this possibly catastrophic kind of change, a ripple across the globe, for us to be able to reconfigure and maybe reconnect to the indigenous ways of looking where we're growing, planting, building, and saying, how can we do this with the minimal impact?
Right, right. And they said, they talked about World War III. They said World War III is not going to look like World War I or II. It's going to be this constant struggle between everyone and everybody, financially, emotionally, mentally, physically, in terms of space, in terms of land, in terms of property, in terms of power, in terms of law, in terms of education. It would just be this constant struggle and argument over everything. That was what they said World War III would look like.
So, well, all it takes is a couple of nuclear bombs going off, and you've got areas that are uninhabitable, and then comes the issue with land grab and property and water and, you know, clean resources of any kind. Is that something that they gave you as a potential?
In hindsight, I can see now. One of the things that I saw was that Japan did not survive, and I thought, what happened to Japan? You know, they didn't really directly show me anything in terms of all the reasons, but everybody in Japan was living everywhere else. And at the time, I just thought that was very unusual. The Middle East had a huge loss of people. There were some pretty serious earthquakes in a few spots. There was a tremendous amount of fighting here in the U.S., and just nothing was working anymore. All of the systems that we have in place, we don't have to even have a war. All we have to have is for some of our basic systems, water, electricity, heat, to go down. And, people are at that point, they got very nervous, and there was huge movements of people. A lot of people were outside of homes, et cetera. So it was, there was this tremendous, surge of communication. At the time, the internet did not exist. This was back in 1980. But they kept talking about this global network, and that global network would be our saving grace, and that we were to keep that thing up and running, and if it went down, we were to bring it back up again, because we would need that, and that it was the symbol of our ability to connect with one another telepathically, and that some of us might have to do that.
I agree. Absolutely, so, wholeheartedly agree. If you use it as a connective tool, it draws you closer to other communities that you have, in my lifestyle, have no way of connecting with up close and personal. But when I see these people and what they're doing, I have so much respect for some of the ideas and the creativity and the innovation that exists in other parts of the world that you don't learn this in a textbook. You don't get this in some kind of a community, rah-rah event. You get it by doing your research and joining the network of connected people on the internet. It's incredible. So that's what I see as really mirroring. And not only that, when you're searching and you're putting the likes and putting the things that you list as your preferences or choices, then you are drawn to others. And if you want to upgrade your connections, you upgrade your own personal style and choices, and then it automatically, like a domino chain reaction, affects everything else. That's where you get the visual of how your thoughts bring to you those like-minded or complementary thoughts. And if you can change your stuff, then it changes everything else around you.
That's right. That's right. And they talked about way back then that there would be a whole series of what they call revelations. I remember they chuckled about that at the time. I didn't connect that with the book of Revelations in the Bible, but, later it was like, duh.
Well, supposedly, that's the thing I love, because in getting my own information, this revelation I've had, it keeps saying there's one coming up very quickly we're going to get, and that's kind of like this domino. It chain reaction of events that comes about as a result of this revelation.
Uh-huh.
And
revelation was coming over the internet. And mm-hmm. at the time I was like, what sort of revelation? You know, and they said it'll be about the greed and the corruption and the manipulation and the research that has been done that was so harmful to people, plants, animals, and planet, et cetera. So, and, you know, we have that now. And I think the nations are trying desperately to get rid of that.
The things that we're really fighting in our health are all of those things that at one time we thought were very helpful that are now in our water supply and our food supply, the antibiotics and the genetically modified foods, our whole landscape has changed with some of the things that we thought were going to be life-saving. And that, you know, to go back and look at that and say, oh my gosh, how do we repair or fix that? Because you can't change it. You have to undo it and in some way modify what you have already set in motion on a very, very clear course that doesn't have a good outcome.
Right. They had three things that they came back to again and again that were the main reasons for the collapse. The first was that the rise of business would not be noticed until it was too late, and that you know, the business would bankrupt the country. So bankrupting of the country, you know, financially was the biggest factor. They said we would go up and down until finally their term was that the United States government would go the way of the Catholic Church into the dust. You know, a few people who still pay attention and maybe send some contributions now and then because they're trying to do a couple projects, but that it would just be over. You know, the second big reason was that...
Hold on. Oh. Let's take a quick break. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll go with the other reasons. And then I want to know a little bit more about these guys.
Okay.
About their background.
Okay.
Did they, you know, what they gave you. We're talking with Penny Kelly. Her book is incredible, Robes, and it still applies. As a matter of fact, some of this stuff is happening right now, even though it was written in the 80s. That's what's so cool about it. So stick around. I'm Wendy Garrett. This is Conscious Living on Empower Radio.
20 years ago, the Americans with Disabilities Act was signed into law. The act was a huge step forward for the 50 million people in this country living with a disability, and the culmination of years of effort by those who marched and spoke up and refused to be treated as second-class citizens. It helped renew the promise that here in America, we're defined not by our limitations, but by our potential. As we celebrate the 20th anniversary of this historic legislation, it's important to remember that we're still fulfilling that promise. We're still working to secure the rights guaranteed by the ADA, the right to live and work without limits, the right to equal justice under the law, and the right of every person in this country to reach for the American dream. We've come a long way since 1990, and I'm committed to making even more progress in the years ahead. Visit disability.gov to see how you can help.
Brought to you by the American Association of People with Disabilities and the Ad Council.
Over there's the water. Whoosh, whoosh. And look at all this stuff I'm standing on. It's called sand, and it's everywhere.
This woman may sound silly to you and me.
It's made up of little tiny pieces of rocks. Teeny little pieces of rocks.
But to her 2-year-old son exploring the world around him, she makes perfect sense.
How does it feel when you touch the sand? Is it warm?
Uh-huh.
It's hard to hold in your hand, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Learning starts long before school does, and children are naturally curious. They want to learn, so follow their lead. Take simple, everyday moments, like sorting laundry or playing on the beach, and turn them into learning moments.
Is this water?
No.
Very good. This is sand. Oh, no, it's not food. It's sand. We don't eat sand.
Turn everyday moments into learning moments. Find out how at bornlearning.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
A bright future starts with a healthy lifestyle.
Pinocchio!
Good nutrition and physical activity are fuel for your child's mind and body.
Now you're talking!
And the food pyramid will help you find the right balance of everything you and your child need. Grains, vegetables, fruits, oils, milk, and meats and beans.
Nothing can stop me now.
Just remember, smart choices from every food group, along with the right amount of physical activity, can put everyone on the path to better health.
Look, the wishing star.
You don't have to make a wish for a healthier you to come true. Just eat right.
Here's an apple.
Be active.
Come on, I'll race you home.
And make it balance.
Attaboy, Pinot.
A healthy lifestyle can lead to great things for you and your child. Visit MyPyramid.gov to learn more. That's MyPyramid.gov. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the Ad Council.
Hi there, and welcome back. This is Conscious Living. I'm Wendy Garrett on Empower Radio. My guest is Penny Kelly. I've interviewed her a couple of times. You might have heard one or two of them. And, you know, if you haven't, check them out. She has a couple of books out on consciousness and energy. One of them is with Dr. Levengood about the crop circle connections and what the plant life, what happens to plants as they're impacted by the energy of these circles, which says there's something going on. I love all of this content because in so many ways I get affirmation and validation of my own very, very incredible and not common experiences of seeing things that other people don't see, of having engagements and encounters. And when I heard the thing about Penny having the four, the men in robes, I thought, yes! Gotta talk to her about that one. And it's not just that this only happens to one person who's had a Kundalini awakening. It's that this is a potential for all of us as we raise our consciousness and our awareness that we are not just a body, that we have this other energy about us that is open and waiting for us to figure it out. This is a way of saying, look, you are more than what you seem. And Penny has all the information to help you fill in your dots because she's got a ton of information that she's written and shared. So, Penny, when you were saying, okay, you saw the first thing, now back to the second, what was the other big,
reason why people didn't survive or people, the population dropped?
Yeah.
The second biggest thing was the loss of health. It was it really had two parts to it. There was an inability to reproduce. We just got to a point where we couldn't, where women just had great difficulty getting pregnant. And the other half of that was famine. And at the time I thought, what? You know, that's something that happened in the Bible. That doesn't affect us. But we have, a tremendous amount of knowledge and equipment and, et cetera. But yeah, they insisted that there would be, generally speaking, famine right at a point when we would finally begin to recognize that we could not survive and thrive and could not evolve consciousness on what they called pretend foods, that we would have to have real foods. Right at that point when we would be realizing that, we would wake up to the fact that we had almost completely destroyed the Earth's ability to produce real food in the quantities that we needed, and that because people would have to get by with manufactured foods, factory foods, mm-hmm. that there would be a huge famine and a huge number of people would just die because their health was so bad and they would not be able to afford health care. They said at one point that there would come a point that the United States government would have to decide whether or not to enact a health care program for everyone. And if it was one of those damned if you do, damned if you don't kind of situations, if they didn't enact it, that people would basically, just go down because they wouldn't be able to afford the health care that was available. And if they did enact it, then it would finish bankrupting the country. And so those were the first two, bankruptcy, the health issue. And then the third issue was that we had lost our connection to Earth and our ability to survive change. And they said, how many times can you rebuild when Mother Nature blows down or washes away or shakes up your house so it's nothing but a pile of rubble. How many times can you afford to rebuild before you say, you know, maybe we should not build here anymore. Maybe we should, you know, be thinking about something else. Maybe we, you know, lots and lots of issues. But they said we would rebuild again and again and again, and that would, you know, whole regions would be disrupted. And we're seeing it now. We haven't even recovered from Katrina, and now we've got Hurricane Sandy to deal with. And, you know, all of the destruction there.
Well, and, you know, several with Florida over and over and over and over.
Yeah.
So it's not just recent. It's over and over. And they're right. They're spot on with that, because when you're looking at all of these areas that get blasted on a continuous basis with hurricanes, it's like, OK, well, we've got flood insurance. Let's go back and put it all right back the way it was. It's like, wait. You know, should there be some places that are off limits? We're not going to get into that right now. But it does really illustrate quite clearly now, as opposed to back when you were doing it, when that kind of stuff hadn't been a nice pattern. And now it's a developed pattern. It's pretty clear for people to contemplate. OK, so what when these guys are there, is there anything? I mean, they're giving you this scenario about you, but is there something? Are we evolving? Are we going someplace? Are we going to save ourselves? Or, you know, do we get on their level? What about these guys?
Well, they had a couple of things. You know, I didn't ever ask them. I didn't ever stop and say, wait a minute, where's your ID? You know, I didn't ask them where they were from, what their names were. To me, they were just, in the beginning, a passing nuisance. Yes.
And so annoying.
Didn't really ever say anything. But
Penny.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Do you think they'll come back so you can?
You know, just recently I sent them a message and said, hey, I think I see some things that you showed us really unfolding terribly. We need help. Come on back. So I haven't seen or heard anything since. And I didn't ask them to come into my life in the beginning. I think this particular group is a group that moves around the planet. They are highly evolved. You can, as I can, you know, think back on it now, I realize that the reason they had this glow and the reason they were able to appear and disappear at will is because those are the skills that a highly developed, you know, body-mind system will take on as it evolves and develops its potential for higher consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they're out there. I have recently been introduced to a group, and they found me because they had all red robes, and they had been attracted to it because they had met the little men in brown robes themselves. And this is a global group, and I was just astounded. So I know they're still working. I do believe that they were an example of what we're moving toward, but they were really very blunt about what we needed to do to evolve.
Well, and I think that's when you get into this kind of connect with entities, life forces, energies beyond our own ability to fathom, then the first thing they do is really, in my experience, have an expectation and set a course for personal improvement, self-development, before they give you any nuggets. They really do say, okay, you're going to have to pony up here.
Yep.
What are you willing to do in exchange? And usually it's a matter of, you had the Kundalini thing, but for me, it was a constant, conscious, intentional program of educating myself about world religions and educating myself about the ways that, in all sorts of manner, people think, and how that changes, shifts, allows certain things to manifest as a result of just one person thinking something and learning that. And then you get, as you do your work, you get more information and more connections, and it expands. It's incredible. It's incredible.
Yeah. It really is. And I think the sky is the limit for us as human beings. Some of the things I saw them do, they took an old house that looked like it was going to blow over if the wind got more than 7 miles an hour. And they just completely restored that house in a matter of about a minute and a half. it just completely renewed itself. Everything in it was renewed. You know, they said that we would have the ability to renew the human body. And, you know, if someone died, that we would be able to bring them back. And I did see examples of that. And then, you know, a couple of years ago, there was an actual example of that on the web. And so there's just all sorts. They subjected me to what they called an education in frequencies. They said, because you have had this Kundalini experience, you really need these experiences. And so they set up a number of experiences for me to learn how to maneuver and how to see and how to work with frequencies. And they said everything is frequencies. And that the fact that the human body is a collection of frequencies, and that those frequencies can be moved into a higher frequency range, is something that we needed to understand was possible, that those frequency bands were the source of various dimensions of you know, various reality systems. And so there was just a ton of stuff that they showed and taught about our potential. And they said, we had a belief in two things. One was that, I forget how they said it, the only things that are unavoidable, you people think the only things that are unavoidable are death and taxes. And what we're going to tell you is that you've imposed the taxes on yourself, and death is a mistake in thinking. And mm-hmm. I was very intrigued by that at the time. They also said that that death was allowed to occur at this level because the bodies that we had were not, and this is a quote, particularly valuable, that we had other bodies that were far more valuable and that would not be subject to death.
Well, does that mean like a light body, an energy body? Did you interpret?
No, they were saying that the body turns into light. And these are some things that I've put together since, you know, doing 30 years of research ever since, you know, it's been 30-some years since I saw these guys. But what I'm beginning to see now is that what we want to do here is develop bodies that look like physical bodies, but they're really made of light. And that you can start that process. And as you do, you move away from the need to actually regenerate the physical body with food, that we can learn to regenerate or to transform the physical body into a body of light, and that once we do that, we will only need light and various frequencies of light in order to renew ourselves. We will no longer, quote, need to eat. And I was pretty upset by that at the time. Now I'm, you know, the fact that there's 50,000 people worldwide who are doing what's called sun gazing and who have learned to live without food. I don't think there's 50,000 that have learned to live without it yet, but there's at least a few, and they have not eaten for 10, 12, 15 years and doing just fine. And they can eat if they want, but they don't need to eat.
That's a mind shift.
Yes, it is. It's a big mind shift. And, you know, for those people who love food, the foodies of the world, they don't want to hear that. And there's a part of me that says, okay, I understand. Yeah, it takes a long time for a civilization to move toward higher consciousness and to move toward the evolutionary potentials that are built in. And, you know, there's some things that I've discovered about us as a people and where we're headed, you know, and I'm just so thrilled about the path that's in front of us. We do have some things to get through, but the path that's in front of us is fabulous. And it includes both the people and the technology and the planet and the plants and the animals. We all have to go together. We can't leave anything behind.
Yeah, I got lots of information about, you know, connecting with trees, connecting with mm-hmm. nature, because they all have their own unique energy and languages.
That's
and
right.
They all have soul. And, you know, I've gotten this message from so many different areas, but in terms of being more important now, it seems to be that I'm finding common links with other people who have this same information and who've been,
right.
In other words, my bottom line is, you think a lot of us are being prompted, encouraged, contacted, connected, so that we can make this little shift in the way that we think and do it
I do.
More quickly?
I do. And I think that it's just a matter of time until we actually make that shift. You know, I think there are some things we have to practice. That's why I teach. You know, people come in, they learn certain things, and they go out different people. They're amazing people. And each one of us, I think the biggest difficulty for a lot of people right now is the idea that they can't use their mind if they're going to be spiritual. And I'm like, what? No, you know, that's not the least bit true.
Oh,
the
no.
The best things happen when you use it all together. Right.
It's like a, you know, it's a high intensity thing. All of a sudden, what you weren't using before, you're doing major studying and renovating and remapping,
right.
rewiring the system that you're basically, to start out with, you have to get rid of all the stuff that you were programmed
right.
and reformat the hard drive.
That's
and
so
go
true.
Forward.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I have a lot of people. I do a lot of consulting with people all around the world, actually. And there's this perception that seems to linger that if they're going to become highly spiritual, they have to stop thinking. And I'm like, no, that is the last thing you want to do. You want to combine that spiritual, you know, that feeling of spiritual connection. And it is a feeling, and it's a feeling of love. It's a feeling of joy. It's an expansive kind of feeling. It's relaxed and it's intense. And that seems like a contradiction until you've experienced it. And then you want to be able to take what you perceive and use your power to make a difference in the world. And in order to do that, you have to bring in your own thinking. Yes, the old patterns have to go, but you still have to be able to use your thinking. So trying to get rid of, you know, ego. I hear a lot of people saying, get rid of ego, get rid of ego. It's like, no, 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 that is not true. Ego is a very important part of yourself that is there to keep an eye on everything that's happening around you, everything that could be a threat. That's what ego's actual purpose is. And when you open to higher consciousness and you expand your perception and you're totally present, ego moves into the background because it's no longer needed, because now you're present and paying attention in every direction. And so the ego fades away.
Sometimes I think they mistake ego for pride, where, you know, when you get into this spiritual thing, you have a
yeah.
whole lot more, you become more magnanimous because you realize everything is connected. And there's a
right.
sense of humility that comes along with that. That's kind of, to me, it goes hand in hand, where
yeah.
it doesn't matter if you get credit. If it happens, that's all
good.
That was needed.
Yeah, that's right. And I think pride, that's a really good point. And I think there's also this sense of, oh gosh, I don't know, how would I put it? There's a sense of, you know, somehow being like in control, like
mm-hmm.
you have to let go of all control. Well, how are you going to use your power if you don't have at least some control? You're controlling yourself, you're managing yourself, and there's this need or this joy in recognizing other forms of life, in honoring those forms of life, in helping those get where they need to be going, and then that help comes back to you. Everybody helps one another. We have a lot of work to do, a lot of work to understand what truly highly developed consciousness is about.
Okay. Now, for me, I've been connecting with a lot of different people and getting information all, you know, across the board on how to upgrade and how to implement your
yeah.
own awareness and become more, I guess, loving and compassionate and caring. And one of the things, though, is that when you do that, the biggest barrier that we have to going forward is fear. And not only that, losing the things that gave us a tangible connection, what we would call grounding, the rituals. Like right now, we've got this ritual of Christmas. What is involved with Christmas and how it's supposed to be? And some of those things are going to fade away because they were only necessary for a certain time. But letting go of that, when you see everybody else around you perpetuating that same cycle, that perception and what they grew up with as kids, and if they let go of that, it's like, oh my, I don't have that connection which gave me the season of cheer. This, you know, all of these, those are hard to let go of, and every culture has them.
That's true. That's true. I think that, you know, we do have some, probably we're always going to be creatures of ritual to some extent. We're going to love some pieces of you know, ritual, et cetera. But when they begin to take over, whatever the ritual is, it just, you know, then it becomes destructive. And I think we have to be on the watch for that. And I think, you know, as in terms of something you said there sparked my thought about the fact that each one of us has to take up the baton, if you will, in the way that we're most interested in doing so. So, you know, for some people, they might start by changing their diet. Other people may start by shutting their mouth. You know, other people may start by going to school. Somebody else may start by just watching what's going on around them. You know, all sorts of things. Some people meditate. A lot of people really don't know how to meditate or how to do so. They don't know the difference between active and passive meditation. They don't know what's the point of meditation, et cetera. But, you know, there's 100 million different ways to start your own evolutionary process, and each person is going to have their own unique spin on that. And, you know, I would just love to encourage everybody to start wherever they feel like starting. And, you know, the low man around Rome said that that was the only thing we could not avoid was our own human development, that we would come back again and again and again until we finally realized it's not working the way we think we're trying to make it work. So maybe we should try, you know, some other way, and maybe we should open up to other possibilities. And that makes a huge difference.
Okay, bottom line is basically, from a spiritual perspective, everything is exactly as it should be for us to get our lessons and to connect the dots. So no matter how chaotic and how unpleasant,
right,
it's up to us to do what's required to shift it into a higher form or to a better potential. Does that make
sense?
That's
right, yes. Yes, and each person is here in order to do that. And yeah, sometimes we goof up and sometimes we stumble, et cetera. But, you know, that doesn't mean that it's too late. That doesn't mean that we can't at some point. I think the bottom line for most of us is recognizing that we have to learn to nurture life in all of its forms. And when, you know, my favorite saying is, when you nurture only life, then you'll have eternal life. So if everything you do nurtures life, then you're moving toward becoming what some of the great teachers have tried to get us to see, was that, you know, we need to move past death. We need to move past believing in death, and we need to move past the crappy stuff that we do that leads to death. So, you know, there's so much work that needs to be done just in that area.
Okay, I'm looking forward to the light body aspect where then I could just focus on my sparkle.
Yeah.
That would be nice. The glow.
And, you know, I agree.
Okay, I'm in the glow. I'm doing the glow. This is good. Because this stuff here is hard.
Yeah, it is. It's a real challenge. You know,
all the emotions, all that stuff, it's hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's probably one of the biggest lessons right there, is learning to manage emotion. So, and the idea is to be able to couple that emotion into something that's positive, and, you know, and then project the thought coupled with that intense emotion in some way that makes something good happen. That's the
I
goal.
I agree. And I think that's why we're here and we're at this point. Okay, so we're going to leave here in a couple of minutes, but is there anything you'd like to leave as a parting, a parting suggestion for people who want to find out more about your information and your books?
Well, I think, my website, www.pennykelly.com, has information on it. My books are available on Amazon. And I also sell some here, at the farm. I think we're getting ready to start an online discussion group and class, an online university for people that are interested in higher consciousness. And so I would invite people to start anywhere. Good teachers, bad teachers, they're all valuable. The bad teachers teach you to appreciate the good teachers, and you'll still get something out of it. The good teachers will take you a long way. In the end, it's all up to you, and there are no shortcuts. Is that encouraging or not?
Yeah. I thank you. Thank you. That's something over and over there. Even when you think you've taken a shortcut and you've got, it's like all of a sudden something comes up and you're going, oh, darn it. Darn it.
Because, and it's rewarding beyond your wildest imagination. Let me tell you.
Well, there's a higher good. There's a higher awareness, a higher being, no matter what it appears to you, whether it's robes or what, that is always present.
That's right. When
you elevate your own ability, your own awareness, your own consciousness, you are able to make those connections. It doesn't mean you're going to get out of the work or you can take a shortcut. It means you're aware the need to appreciate the experience, good, bad, and indifferent, all the way through so that you can come out the other side on a higher plane. And that's,
there you have it. You said it beautifully.
Well, I'm in the trenches, okay?
Yep.
Still in the trenches. So, but Penny, I love talking with you. You've got another book coming out, so we're going to connect again when you get that other book ready to, to be unveiled. In the meantime, if you're listening, please check out Facebook, check out the books Consciousness and Energy. There right now are two volumes you can work with, and one talks about Dr. Levengood and the work that Penny's done with him, which is extraordinary. There are so many wonderful mysteries in our world that we have yet to solve that are there calling to us to say, wake up. Wake up, give it a shot, open your eyes, invest, and become more empowered just by being fully present. That it's nice to be here now when people are doing that in such great numbers. Thank you, Penny. I appreciate
you. You're so welcome. Thank you for having me.
I'm Wendy Garrett. This is Conscious Living on Empower Radio. Have a fabulous day, a wonderful life, and wherever you are, remember, it's all up to you to create your next step, your next phase, your next spiritual epiphany, and you can do it. That's why you're here. See ya.